Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, first-time Costco vacation package traveler.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that embraces intensity, at least when it comes to movie going. Anytime else, some of us opt to simply chill out, or as Mary Pat puts it, hurkle-durkle. But for the past week, we chose to see a couple of films that thrive on intense emotions. The first is Weapons, writer-director Zach Cregger's follow-up to 2022's Barbarian. From there, we'll look at Cloud, veteran Japanese writer-director Kiyoshi Kurosawa's tale of a young guy's trek into what the Greeks would have considered the world of hubris. Let's begin by heading to a typical American suburban neighborhood that, early one morning, experiences an atypically mysterious phenomenon involving 17 school children. That phenomenon would shock anyone, but it's especially hard on third-grade teacher Justine, played by Julia Garner, who walks into her classroom one morning to see a single student, Alex, played effectively by 9-year-old Carrie Christopher. The others, at 2:17 earlier that morning, had all run away, literally as various CCTV security cameras show, their arms extended as if they were pretending to be airplanes. Pretty soon, parents have congregated to question school officials, and a number of them, but especially Archer, played by Josh Brolin, are blaming teacher Justine. Writer-director Zach Cregger tells his story in sections, each keying on an individual character, and all meld together as the movie progresses through what becomes a mystery marked by witchcraft and spells and an ultra-weird late-film performance by the veteran star Amy Madigan. Weapons, a surprise box office earner, isn't scary as much as it is intriguingly made, though movie fans sensitive to scenes of violence should be warned. And two, there's this. In a season already full of good child performances, the one put in by young Christopher certainly stands out.
I think it's also a really funny movie, but more on that later, because I do want to go back and briefly talk about that Amy Madigan performance, because I don't want to spoil anything, but she's basically like an old crone out of a Grimm's fairy tale, but she's styled in the weirdest way, and it was driving me crazy trying to figure out
that's what
who
for him
is
too.
This?
And
I recognize
knew who
that
was.
Voice. Who's the actor? And so I just love, like, she is having a blast, and I was having a blast watching her. She just kind of sweeps into this movie and steals it away from everyone. And as you mentioned, Weapons is structured in, you know, it's a series of chapters, each one from this singular character's point of view. And every time Zach Cregger hard cuts to a new chapter, you can kind of feel this charge running through the audience, because we're all thinking, what could we possibly be getting into next? Mm. And you could predict anything and you would probably be wrong. And Cregger previously made a movie called Barbarian, which was also this kind of twisty horror comedy with lots of gore and weird stuff happening in basements. He continues that motif here. And he comes from a comedy background. He was in the sketch comedy troupe, The Whitest Kids You Know. And this movie, Weapons, despite being about children in peril and having, you know, uncomfortable real-world parallels to horrible things that have happened in our own society, has lots of big, wild laughs in it. Even the way he edits this movie gets laughs. There's one scene involving a character running and running and running, and the way he cuts around that action is funny. Like, just the jump cuts he uses made me laugh. And I think the basic appeal of this movie and why it has become such a word-of-mouth hit is that you don't know where it's going from scene to scene. And I think this is the kind of movie that if you can see it with an audience that is on its wavelength, it's a lot of fun to be in a room with people all experiencing this weird movie for the first time. So I do have some issues with it that maybe we can talk about later. But for the most part, yeah, I just think Weapons is a blast. I just liked how weird and sick and funny it was.
As you well know, the horror genre is not my jam, but I agree with you. For whatever reason, this film did work for me better than I expected, because I typically have to be dragged to these movies, and that was true here as well. People will definitely recognize Julia Garner, because not only does she have a pretty decent filmography at this point, you know, she was in Ozark and actually won, I think she won a couple of Emmys.
A bunch of it. She has like a slew
of
them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so she's one of those characters. I remember her best from the film The Assistant.
Yes.
Yeah. Where she, because that's where she really impressed me, I guess, for the first time in terms of her acting chops.
I first noticed her on The Americans. She has a really pivotal supporting part.
Okay. So you'll recognize her. And she's sort of an atypical star in the sense that, you know, she has this very curly hair. And so she can play serious and she can play comedic and she can do all of these different things. I am always concerned about what they do in horror films with children because it makes me nervous about what's going to happen. But here, the focal point is only one of the kids, and he's the sort of key to the Amy Madigan character or whatever. And the rest of the kids, we pretty much see them either in their regular classroom or they're running away, almost as though they're flying like little spirits away from this demon or this force that's compelling them. So I agree that it's not your typical comedy, but it's not even really a dark comedy. But there were a series of comedic moments throughout that sort of, so if you're expecting to be scared, there were a couple points where there were surprises, not to give them away. But I do think it's leavened with this comedic thing that I wasn't anticipating.
I don't want people to get the wrong idea. This is not a comedy. I mean, Nathan laughed.
It's
and
funny.
If I had been in the theater with Nathan, I probably would have been turning around going,
lots of people in
laughing?
My theater were laughing. Yeah. Especially, I mean, I don't like jump scares in movies.
Yeah.
But Zach Cregger gets in a couple good ones
here that genuinely
got me. And you can't
Dan
help.
Jumped at one point.
And you can't help but laugh after that happens. Those are designed to make you scream and then you laugh. Because you screamed.
But that's not necessarily a comedy. Oh, and the Amy Madigan character, you know what movie that it made me think of? Long Legs. Remember?
Sure.
With Nicolas Cage? Yeah. He played this weird guy. It's the same thing. She's got this very weird kind of red wig.
Yeah.
And
sometimes she does.
She doesn't come on until in the second half of the film, really, and she doesn't even become a real central character till the last half hour. And I kept wondering, just as you did, who is that?
Yeah.
And I had to look it up on IMDb. In the
It's only an Academy Award nominated actress.
Yeah, exactly.
She also
the actual Field of Dreams wife.
That's right. She also reminded me of Angelica Houston's performance in Nicholas Roeg's movie The Witches, based on the Roald Dahl novel, where there's something about watching somebody play evil and just like luxuriating in it. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's doing here. Like, it's so campy and it might for some people run the movie off the rails, but for me, it just kind of injected it with this nice comic weirdness. I mean, I'm not saying that this is just a comedy because it has intense scenes, it has sad scenes. And also, I think if there is a problem with Weapons, it's that you never really get a sense of this town. You know, because he's focused on each of these individual characters and each of these chapters, I didn't get a sense of how this town as a whole is reacting to this tragedy. And I think that's what the movie is kind of supposed to be about. You compare this to something like, this is going to seem lofty, but you compare it to something like The Virgin Suicides, which I think he's obviously very indebted to, or even The Sweet Hereafter, which is that very strange Adam McGoyan movie about what happens to a town when they lose a bunch of children.
Yeah.
And that also has kind of a weird surrealism about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's missing from this that could have made it really great if it had had that weight to it. Instead, it just kind of turns into like a haunted house kind of thrill ride at the end. But it's a good haunted house thrill ride.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the imagery is amazing. I mean, when you look at their little ring photos of these children leaving the house
in
the middle of the night.
It's genuinely unsettling.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
My problem with films like this is that as long as it is something that's unexplained, something that's in the dark that can come at you and get you, I'm all there. Boy, that is what gets me. But then when they start bringing in, witches and spells and stuff, I go, that's such
I like that better than monsters and Transformer-type insect creatures and all that stuff. That seemed more believable to me than some of those other horror films.
Well, those are the movies I laugh at, the ones with the monsters.
Fair enough. Yeah. I did want to talk about Josh Brolin a little bit. I think that was a miscast, but that's just me. I mean,
well, you know who it was originally supposed to be?
No.
Flavor of the Month, Pedro Pascal.
Oh.
I think Josh Brolin is a better pick for that role.
Then maybe Pedro, but I don't know. Maybe just because I thought he was too old to have this young kid, but we know about, a lot of people have second families.
How about Dean Winters? He could have been Mayhem. Yeah. Could have brought him.
Yeah, that would have added an edge to this film.
But I also agree with you, Dan, about the I'm much more interested in the how than the why or even the what. And that's why I think the first part of this movie is so exciting. I was also thinking of the movie Magnolia, which is about all these weird, cruel coincidences. And Alden Ehrenreich plays a cop in this movie that there's a moment where I said, oh, he must have been inspired by Magnolia because he's a spitting image of John C. Reilly's cop character in that movie. Mm-hmm. And there's this kind of inspired little section in the middle that becomes about this cop and this petty thief. And you think, how is this going to come back around? And it sort of does. Yeah. I don't know if this movie will work a second time. I think part of the...
So no Weapons 2, 3, and 4?
I mean, even just rewatching it again. Because you get that jolt because you're like, I don't know where this movie's taking me. And I don't know if it'll have replay value, but we'll see.
And that was our discussion of the horror film Weapons. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Japanese import, Cloud. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss the horror movie Weapons. Let's now turn to Cloud, the psychological thriller written and directed by Japanese filmmaker Kiyoshi Kurosawa. The concept of reselling, this being the process of buying up a certain catalog of items and then offering them for sale at an upscale price, is apparently a growing industry. One statistic claims that e-commerce, or the buying and selling of goods and services over the internet, accounts for some 18% of worldwide sales. That doesn't seem to be much of a problem, except for those times when what the sellers are offering aren't what they claim to be. And Yoshi, played by Masaki Suda, is adept at selling fakes and knockoffs of products to unsuspecting buyers. But soon he gets targeted by a mysterious group intent on punishing him for his perceived sins. Written and directed by the Japanese filmmaker Kiyoshi Kurosawa, no relation to Akira Kurosawa, Cloud is a commentary both on greed and duplicity and on contemporary culture in which the anonymity of web interactions can, and sometimes does, lead to real-world consequences that aren't always pleasant to bear. Kurosawa doesn't answer all the questions that he poses, and he doesn't make room in his film for feminist politics, not in any way, shape, or form. But he does keep us guessing about what's coming up next, all the way past the final sounds of murderous gunfire.
Dan, I might take a little issue with the no room for feminist politics, because there's one way you could play this out that said, oh, and that's part of the surprise. But I wanted to talk about Cloud because I knew nothing really about the filmmaker, and I'm hoping that each of you will jump in on that. And I also knew nothing about the topic of this particular film, which was this reselling phenomenon, which, of course, we know exists in the world and how we have these, you know, five-minute auctions and so forth and so on. The one problem that I had was this guy is a reseller, and we initially encounter him when he's trying to take these so-called medical devices off the hands of a fellow who is poised on the edge of bankruptcy or something. What I never really figured out is I got the impression that these medical devices didn't work, but I didn't know if they were actual fakes or if they were just sort of inadequate devices or whatever. But we find out that he ramps up the price of these, and Dan had to do a brief in-the-dark calculation of what these amounts were. But he ramps up the price of these, like each individual medical device is now 2.5 times the cost of what he paid for this whole lot of 20 or 25. So we're initially thinking, oh, maybe this guy's really a savvy business person. But then we discover, oh, maybe not so much. But he has a girlfriend who, and maybe this is the anti-feminist piece of it, seems to be really focused on only material things, not on him, not on work, not on anything else. And so he decides with his newfound fortunes to move to this isolated country place that really does appear to be in the middle of nowhere. And he continues his business, but it's starting to create some problems. And he's fortunate because he gets a neighborhood guy, young guy, to help him out. Now, at that point, we know that this guy is going to play a different role than just his, like, clueless assistant. But we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. So the film turns from sort of this revenge tale into this bloodbath. That's really the only way to describe it. And so I want people to be prepared for that. And there are some twists and turns that I didn't anticipate. And so in the end, Cloud, as surprising as it might be, I really ended up enjoying it because of all of these different juxtapositions. And I think that's due to the skill of the filmmaker. And you both can talk about some of his other offerings.
Yeah, I think if you've seen some of Kiyoshi Kurosawa's other movies, specifically his two most famous, which are Cure from 1997, which is about this madness that seems to be passing from person to person like a virus or something. And then Pulse from 2001, which is about basically dialing up spirits on the internet.
Yeah.
If you've seen those, then you'll think you know where Cloud is headed because of his past work. At least I was pretty confident that I knew what was going on. There's this guy who's making a lot of enemies online, and then mysterious things start happening to him in real life. Mm-hmm. But what makes it so delightful is that Kurosawa seems to anticipate that you're anticipating that. And so he keeps zigging when you think he's going to zag. And like Weapons, this is doing a lot of genre gymnastics because it does start as this quiet horror movie. And then it ends as this kind of wild, explosive action comedy question mark. I mean, it's pretty funny because the characters are doing things that are impulsive and kind of stupid. And that seems to be, I think, what he's getting at here with this movie. But the suspense part of it in the first half of Cloud is so simple and so elegant. It's about just building one thing on top of another, which is what he does so well, is he kind of lets you fill in the missing pieces. So, for example, early on in the movie, Yoshi sees this strange man down on the street looking up at his window. It's at night. And then the power goes out. And then there are footsteps. And then the doorbell rings. And just the logical, like, buildup of that. That's classic horror movie technique. Later on,
the power goes back on.
Yes.
And then he has to run and turn the lights off.
And so there is, like, you are kind of laughing because you recognize you're being manipulated. Then later on, and this is an image that's in some of the posters for the movie, we see something or someone through this, like, textured glass window. And it comes at a moment that we're not expecting it. And
yeah, that's when I jumped.
It's such an effective scare because it's so understated and it's so unsettling at the same time. So he just has a mastery over these images in a way that so many modern horror filmmakers, they don't have the patience or the technique for this kind of thing.
You know, that one view that you saw is very much like what the movie Strangers and Strangers 2.
Oh, yeah.
That came out, you know, about
the
these people.
The people that show up in the middle of the night and get into your house. Yeah.
We suspected that there was some larger organization behind what happens here and the sort of revenge seeking or the vengeance that they're seeking on this guy. And it's never truly explained that it's the Yakuza, for example. But, I mean, we get the impression that this guy has purposely or inadvertently sort of tread into their territory, their criminal enterprise. And that's why he is going to be the subject of their wrath. But then it sort of shifts. And that's what I really liked about it. And we're not going to reveal the ending because that's way too much information that no one needs in advance.
Yeah, I'm still mulling over the ending of Cloud. But I think
try to mull over the end of Pulse.
He wants to leave you questioning and thinking and maybe even arguing with the people you saw the movie with. But I think what it seems to be summing up is just Kurosawa's feelings about the modern world, because his movies are always about the modern world at the time they were made. And I think his feeling is we're doomed, I think is basically what that ending is saying. And I also think when you compare the characters from those earlier Kurosawa movies, like Cure, like Pulse, there's an intelligence about those characters. There's a reason for everything that they do. I used the word impulsive earlier. That's exactly what the characters are like here. It's almost like he's trying to show that in the span of those 20 years since the birth of, you know, home internet to now, we've all gotten dumber. Mm-hmm. Our attention spans have been eroded. And so these people are making choices for no other reason than like, yeah, that sounds good. And it comes back to bite them ultimately.
Well, and our protagonist here, such as he is, starts out as this factory worker. And his boss sees his leadership potential, but his boss is not willing to give him the job that he wants. And that's sort of a commentary, I think, on Japanese business culture, where you sort of wait your turn. And then, you know, if you're a company man, so to speak, then you rise up through the ranks. And so that goes back to the impulsivity of this character, because he makes one successful move and then he's, you know, is going to get rid of this steady job and the potential for advancement and so forth and so on. And we know that that obviously does not play out as he intended. So then what's the message there? Should you be a company man, as boring as it might be?
And typical of Kurosawa, that boss is not who you think he is. You find out later he's something else completely.
Well, and there's this whole passage in the middle of Cloud where the character thinks, oh, okay, this is my next big win in terms of online reselling. And it involves him going to the store and basically trying to, like, cheat this guy out of all of these dolls of, like, a
figurines,
pop star or something.
Yeah.
And so, like, you are kind of laughing along with this because you're like, what is he doing? He clearly has no game plan. And meanwhile,
and he doesn't have much game either.
Yes. And meanwhile, we realize that all these people that are kind of humming in the background, trying to figure out ways to get vengeance, they've also overinflated his game too, where they think that he's this, you know, great ringleader and he's just some guy on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's lots of fun little ironies and surprises all throughout this movie. And then, as you mentioned, it gets to an ending that is so strange, I wouldn't even know how to describe it. But yeah this is a fun one.
It's an ending that Quentin Tarantino would look at and go, what? You did what?
Although it's kind of in keeping with his the mysterious briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. It has that kind of mysterious quality to it. So I liked that about it.
Yeah. Well, if you want to, you can catch a lot of Kurosawa's films. And this is Kiyoshi Kurosawa. A lot of them were streaming. I saw Pulse, and it was streaming on several different.
Yeah, definitely worth going back and looking at his work if you're not familiar.
At any rate, that was our discussion of the Japanese film Cloud. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the horror film Weapons. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the poet Mina Loy. There is no space or time, only intensity, and tame things have no immensity. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.